Welcome to the book show, Cutting Edge Talk about Cutting Edge Books. I'm Alex Papajohn.
And I'm Jack Singer.
We are going to be interviewing today Robert C. Atkins, MD, a.k.a. Dr. Atkins. He is the legendary diet guru.
The legend.
That's right. The Atkins diet. I'm sure everybody's heard about Dr. Atkins, or most of you have. He's written many, many, many books. And he, once upon a time, was overweight himself.
Three chins, I think he said.
Three chins. And his latest book is Atkins for Life, The Complete Controlled Carb Program for Permanent Weight Loss and Good Health. And we're going to be talking to him about this book, about the diet program, specific foods that you should eat, fats, are they good for you, bad for you?
Well, I can attest to it, being in a short 2 weeks, that I have more energy now than I probably had 20 years ago.
Is that right?
And that's right.
And so Jack is actually on the Atkins diet right now. How long have you been on it?
Actually 3 weeks now.
For 3 weeks you've been on the Atkins diet. So we're going to have Jack give his report to Dr. Atkins on his progress. Should be a really interesting conversation because this guy's book, by the way, was number one, and it's definitely in the top 10 best-selling books in America right now.
He was top 10. My gosh.
Two books he had in the top 10.
Exactly. But I remember that last book, it must have been top 10 for, I'd say, 8 to 10 weeks straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
He's coming out with a line. He already has his energy bars out.
Which you just tried. We just shared a brownie. Was it a brownie almond bar?
Yeah, brownie
that
almond.
That was awesome.
Yeah. You can go to Walmart now. It's not cheap, folks. A 2.2-ounce bar is $1.93, and that's at Walmart. So it's not cheap. But he's coming out with low-carb, you know, ice cream and low-carb bread. And I guess we'll ask about this, but I think his diet basically is you can eat proteins, you can have fats, and you really, really want to limit
steak,
your carbs.
Steak, lobster, shrimp, enjoy.
Yeah, eggs. He loves eggs. So anyway, it should be interesting.
But before we do that, we're going to have MJ. Right?
We're going to have MJ Rose do our What's News in Publishing segment.
Let's go to a commercial break, and we'll come back with MJ.
Sounds good. This is The Book Show on WLEE Hot Talk 990. We'll be right back.
Do you like to write? If so, Writer's Digest, the world's leading magazine for writers, is for you. Since 1920, Writer's Digest has provided expert writing instruction, inspiration, and up-to-date marketing information. Each month, readers turn to Writer's Digest to discover technique columns geared toward specific genres, including screenwriting, fiction, nonfiction, children's books, and more. Publishing information, including how to write solid cover and query letters that catch the interest of agents and editors. Tips and tricks for overcoming writer's block. Career opportunities. Interviews with best-selling authors. Tools of the trade, including the latest information on writing software and hardware, legal advice for writers, and more. Log on to www.writersdigest.com/thebookshow and ask for your two free issues. You'll see why more than 200,000 writers rely on Writer's Digest every month to learn the secrets of getting their words polished, published, and paid for.
Do you want thousands of books at your fingertips? If so, go to enovel.com. At enovel.com, you'll find thousands of e-books, print books, and audiobooks to browse and buy. Enovel.com, the world's biggest e-book site, sells books from big-name authors and hot new rising stars. And if you're a promising writer, Enovel might publish your book, too. So go to www.enovel.com to shop for great e-books, print books, and audiobooks, or to publish your own book today.
The world of publishing is changing. More and more authors are self-publishing their work, and why shouldn't they? Self-publishing offers greater creative control and potential for greater financial reward than more traditional methods. That's why we started Self Publishers Digest, a how-to guide for authors that want to publish their own work successfully. Each month, we feature articles about writing, marketing, and promoting your self-published piece. All of the articles are written by authors who have self-published successfully. If you're interested in learning more about the world of self-publishing or submitting a story, please contact us at info@titanbeach.com. Or, if you're interested in display or classified advertising opportunities with Self-Publishers Digest, please contact Chris Ferguson at cferguson@titanbeach.com. Self-Publishers Digest, the path to self-publishing.
This is the What's News in Publishing segment with author, journalist, and e-publishing guru MJ Rose. MJ, welcome to the book show.
Thank you.
Good to have you on. You've got some interesting news items, starting off with humor columnist Michael Wolff commenting on the publishing industry and being in the book business.
Yeah. He kind of says that books are dead and that everybody who's smart is in another business. He actually, quote, says, "Why, for God's sakes, would anyone want to work in the book business anyway?" And some people have pointed out that Wolff often tends to be contemptuous of businesses he's failed in. Although he's in the magazine business now, and a lot of people say the magazine isn't doing any better.
What did he do previously?
I don't know which publishing company he worked for and ran, but he did that. And he's had a book or two published, but he's fairly well known for not succeeding in publishing.
All right, so he lobbed a bunch of insults towards the publishing industry. You think any of them have
I don't know. I mean, listen to some of this stuff. Book publishing is a liberalish, feminist redoubt, but in some kind of retrograde inversion. The economic model requires that women, mostly, do the job because they have husbands to support them. Young women and the odd few young men who end up in book publishing tend to have their parents supporting them. And he says, almost all the power in the business resides with, or you might say has been turned over, to a single distributor, Barnes & Noble. And did you guys read the column?
Yeah, well, I read this article. I didn't read his column, but I read this whole article right here. I think he's making things a little bit too simplistic, don't you?
Yeah, he's making things too simplistic, and he's focusing on a very real problem that the book industry is having, which we've talked about, which is too many books, less and less readers all the time, more people turning to television and movies. And I read the whole article, and the article is really actually fascinating because it kind of says that books are outmoded and outdated, and people don't really need to read books anymore. And I think that there's some truth to, not that they don't need to, but there's some truth to the fact that lots of people are turning away from books, that it's too active when television is passive and you can watch television and be on your computer and talk on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read a book, you got to give everything to your book.
Well, I think that's why the book business needs to gravitate to more exciting uses of the media. For example, audiobooks is one thing because you can listen to a book passively, right?
Yeah.
And do something else. But also perhaps being able to video an author reading his book or something. You know what I mean? And have it run on your computer.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it may be that we're just heading towards, you know, in different centuries, different things become more popular and others become less popular. There were no books, so to speak, in the 15th century, but there were a lot of plays. And there's no question that plays are one of the most dying arts now because it's so expensive to put on a production for a very limited number of people who can view it at any one time.
Right.
Maybe books really are, I mean, probably not in our lifetime, but maybe in 100 years, people really won't be writing books. They'll just be making multimedia story presentations.
Interesting. You may be right about that. That would be kind of sad, though, I think.
I know. Yeah. I think so, too.
I mean,
but
you know what? Educators keep harping on how important it is to read because it really develops your vocabulary.
Yeah.
So you wonder, you know.
Just keep in mind, textbooks, more and more of those even are getting e-books and
tutorial stuff. When you see an e-textbook, you don't ever want to look at a regular textbook again because it's got all the text, but it's also got audio and it's got video, and you can email your professor from any part of the textbook with any passage that you don't understand.
Right.
I mean, you can... The visual things that they're doing with the textbooks are amazing.
And they're always current, too. You don't have to worry about being outdated.
And there's no resale, so the publisher makes more money on them.
That's true.
Because there's nobody buying and selling the same old textbook for $4, which is outdated anyway.
Well, change is constant, and the book business has to adapt to this evolving technology.
Right.
And the new media. So we'll see how successful they are. I think some old businesses will be destroyed, but there's going to be some of these publishers will adapt, some will not, and you're going to have also some new do companies rise, I think.
Well, the one thing that's never gone away is people for tens of thousands of years have told each other stories.
Right.
People will continue to tell each other stories. Just what form they tell those stories in might change.
Right. Good point. All right, let's move on to your next news item,
which
MJ.
Which is there on purpose to bring some sanity back to the conversation.
Backlist classics.
Yeah, because there are thousands of titles that are more than 50 years old that are selling incredibly well and selling more than many new novels. Like last year, The Grapes of Wrath sold 150,000 copies, which would make it a bestseller if it was counted as such. But backlist titles don't tend to make it back onto the bestseller list.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know why. I mean, every year The Fountainhead sells over 100,000 copies. And any new author that came up to, you know, who was published last year, sold 100,000 copies, would be thrilled to death. I mean, I'd be happy with 100,000 copies sold.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, there's a huge business in the classics and the backlist. I think it accounts for over 50% of the profit in the book industry.
And are these public domain books mostly, or?
A lot of them are, or they're going to be soon. A lot of Penguin's list is. That's why a lot of the publishers all publish the same books, and they make the covers so spiffy and put them into collections so that the reader would want to own the same.
The Tom Sawyers of the world, that type of stuff.
Like, if you look at the Penguin ones, if you go to Amazon and click through all the Penguin reprints, they have 1,300 titles, but if you just look at 10 of them, they're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
They're just gorgeous books, and you kind of want to own them all and have that be your library.
Possessions, yeah. Make it a physical possession of yours.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, interesting. Very interesting. I didn't know Steinbeck's sold approximately 150,000 copies last year alone.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So that publisher is making a lot of money.
Right, right.
Yeah.
All right. Last news item, controversial gun scholar caught defending himself through alter ego. I did read about this earlier, but go ahead.
Well, John Lott wrote a book called More Guns, Less Crime in 1998. The supposition being if you just brandish a gun at a criminal, you'll scare him or her away. I guess him, because there aren't too many women running around with guns,
right,
robbing people and killing them. But
right.
Which says something about men and women, but we won't get into that. So it turns out that he's been his biggest fan, and he's taken a pseudonym, which is Mary Rosh, and he's been posting vigorous, even fawning defenses of himself all over the place, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and any place that anybody will listen to him, defending himself in his book and making it into a much bigger deal.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is that now, it's a big no-no to do that. As an author, you know, we all want to go do that and come up with 80 pseudonyms and go to Barnes & Noble and Amazon and post our own reviews. But it's cheating.
But doesn't every author do it?
I mean, you know how many authors do that? Thousands.
Oh, they say thousands do it, but all the authors I know, what we do is we have a list of fans who have written to us.
Uh-huh.
And if a really crummy review shows up at Amazon, we write to our fans and say, a really crummy review showed up at Amazon. If one of you hasn't posted a review of my book, will you go do it now?
Right.
I mean, I've never done it. I've never posted a review of my own books. It just...
Well, okay, so what is this? Is this a moral, ethical...
It's a moral issue.
It's
a moral issue.
And the more, and it is what? That he is portraying himself as an objective...
Yeah, an objective stranger who doesn't know him, who's posting incredibly wonderful things about his book.
Right, right.
And he's also under scrutiny for something else, which is that the whole book is based on a research study that he supposedly did himself, except that he can't show any paperwork to prove that he ever did this study. He claims his computer crashed. Actually, he claims a bookshelf fell on his computer and that the entire study was lost.
Uh-huh.
And he can't prove anything. So he's under scrutiny for that, for people who wonder if this book was completely just based on his own theory.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but you can write, if you write a book based on your own theory, you should identify it as such, not
right,
as a book based on a basic, huge research study.
Right, right.
So and he's a member of the NRA, not to
not to knock the NRA.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, MJ, so much for
joining us.
Bye-bye. Take care. Have a good week. That's
you
MJ
too.
Rose, author, journalist, and e-publishing guru out of New York, doing her What's News in Publishing segment. This is The Book Show.
Do you like to write? If so, Writer's Digest, the world's leading magazine for writers, is for you. Since 1920, Writer's Digest has provided expert writing instruction, inspiration, and up-to-date marketing information. Each month, readers turn to Writer's Digest to discover technique columns geared toward specific genres, including screenwriting, fiction, nonfiction, children's books, and more. Publishing information, including how to write solid cover and query letters that catch the interest of agents and editors. Tips and tricks for overcoming writer's block. Career opportunities. Interviews with best-selling authors. Tools of the trade, including the latest information on writing software and hardware, legal advice for writers, and more. Log on to www.writersdigest.com/thebookshow and ask for your two free issues. You'll see why more than 200,000 writers rely on Writer's Digest every month to learn the secrets of getting their words polished, published, and paid for.
Do you want thousands of books at your fingertips? If so, go to enovel.com. At enovel.com, you'll find thousands of e-books, print books, and audiobooks to browse and buy. Enovel.com, the world's biggest e-book site, sells books from big-name authors and hot new rising stars. And if you're a promising writer, Enovel might publish your book, too. So go to www.enovel.com to shop for great e-books, print books, and audiobooks, or to publish your own book today.
The world of publishing is changing. More and more authors are self-publishing their work, and why shouldn't they? Self-publishing offers greater creative control and potential for greater financial reward than more traditional methods. That's why we started Self-Publishers Digest, a how-to guide for authors that want to publish their own work successfully. Each month, we feature articles about writing, marketing, and promoting your self-published piece. All of the articles are written by authors who have self-published successfully. If you're interested in learning more about the world of self-publishing or submitting a story, please contact us at info@titanbeach.com. Or, if you're interested in display or classified advertising opportunities with Self-Publishers Digest, please contact Chris Ferguson at cferguson@titanbeach.com. Self-Publishers Digest, the path to self-publishing.
Dr. Atkins, I'm Alex Papajohn.
And I'm Jack Singer.
Jack Singer, welcome to The Book Show.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. We've both gone through your book.
I've gone through it very thoroughly since I decided when I got the book to try it for 2 weeks.
Now, which book are we talking about?
This is Atkins for Life, the complete controlled carb program for permanent weight loss and good health.
Okay, good.
And there's a lot in here. There's a lot of material in here. And
yep.
It's very detailed, which is what I like, because you make a lot of recommendations in terms of dieting and foods you should eat and foods you should avoid and recipes. And I'm looking over here at Jack, and I'm not seeing as much over here, because he's been on your plan, and he's looking a little slimmer.
Actually, it's 3 weeks as of today. It was 2 weeks from when I got my blood tested, because my main problem is I had triglycerides that were through the roof. In fact, they were high, they couldn't even get a good cholesterol reading because my triglycerides were so high.
Well, our diet should lower the triglycerides by 70%.
It took mine from well over 500 down to 152.
Isn't that funny? It's exactly 70%.
Now, it didn't help.
I hadn't even talked to you about it.
That's absolutely true.
That's because it lowers everybody by 70%.
Well, the doctors and all, my wife especially, wanted me to go on this medicine, Lipitor, and all this stuff.
Well, the Lipitor, all it do is prevent your sex life from developing.
Well, after you're married so long, it's not that good. Anyway, never mind. it did great on the triglycerides, but my quick. Hello? Uh-oh, we lost him. Let's bring him back.
Okay. So hit this button.
Yeah. Well, luckily, we're recording.
It wasn't on our end.
No, it wasn't. It was on his end. Just dial him up again.
All right.
I'll have to edit that one section out in case Mary listens.
Yeah.
We lost you there.
Dr. Atkins.
I don't know what happened, but it really went out.
Yeah. Okay. All right, no problem.
We're going to press the button here and get started again.
We'll get going again.
Okay.
All right, you're back with us, right, Dr. Atkins?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic.
Great.
Yeah, what I was saying is the triglycerides, it did an awesome job. My question to you on the cholesterol, because I'm eating, obviously, steak and shrimp and lobster and, you know, salads, you know, a lot of great things I enjoy eating. Will the cholesterol start coming down also?
Well, it doesn't come down as much because the good cholesterol goes up. The HDL goes up.
Mine has. So, my good cholesterol stayed exactly the same. My bad cholesterol went up just slightly. But the
that takes time.
Yeah, the doctor was ecstatic about the triglycerides coming down.
We like to give people medication, not medications, but the nutrients that take the place of medication.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a cholesterol formula that we use, and more importantly, the fish oil is incredibly valuable for triglycerides. It's actually the best treatment of all.
Right.
Now, if you eat a lot of fish, because it's the fatty fish like salmon, you'll get the same results. Mm-hmm. But if you do that and take fish oil capsules, it's even better.
Gotcha.
Why don't we go back in time a little bit and start off at the very, very, very beginning. You became a medical doctor, and
yep.
What prompted you to write your very, very first book?
Well, first of all, what prompted me to go on a diet would be more interesting.
All right. What prompted you to go on a diet?
This went back to 1963, and of course I was prompted by the fact that I found that I had three chins. Gaining a lot of weight. And it turned out that in October of 1963, there was an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association which said that there's an alternative to being hungry and going on a low-calorie diet, which would be to go on a low-carbohydrate diet.
Right.
So I just went on it, and of course it was dramatically successful for me. I helped my energy level dramatically. I used to need 8.5 hours sleep, and by the time I'd been on the diet for 2 months, I needed 5.5 hours sleep.
Wow.
Which, by the way, is all I need ever since. It really changed my whole life in that way.
Hmm.
And, of course, it changed in a lot of other ways. I think I got smarter than I had been before. So I decided I would put other people on the diet, and I had a job at AT&T. Taking care of the junior executives, and so they gave me 65 who were overweight, and all 65 of them got to their goal weight. So that's what really got me started. Then I really decided that I would treat more and more patients that way, and after I treated about 10,000 of them, then somebody asked me to write a book. So I did. And the book did very well, sold 12 million copies. And
it's fantastic.
What it did was it aggravated the AMA, the same people who had written the article that told me to go on the diet. And they said, we never said that. We never wrote that. And then they went and all sorts of other things which weren't very true. And what that did is change my whole approach to medicine. I realized that I couldn't be a mainstream doctor and be just a pill pusher. But that I had to go and learn other things, so I learned about all the other things that that nature could do, all the natural therapies. And I wrote a book called How Complementary Medicine Can Extend Your Life.
I see.
And that was really what I was into, just treating people differently from what I was taught to do in medical school.
So you had you were overweight after you had finished medical school, is that right?
And then I was gaining weight for 5 years. The first 5 years afterward, I gained more weight more rapidly than I ever did in my life.
I see.
So I really had to do this. It wasn't. It was no option. It was actually I've only been on one diet in my life because it was my first diet, and I'm still on it.
Looking back over the last few years, it's almost to the point when, I mean, I used to watch you, and I've heard about enough. I have enough friends that have been on the diet. But I kept hearing you being basically vilified by the AMA, which is really it's a bad situation, especially when you look at what's happened as of late with the latest reports that say you are on the target. You're actually correct.
Yeah, it's very true that I'm right. And the problem is with the AMA is that they know they were wrong, and they know that I'm on to telling the world that they were wrong, and they don't like that.
Well, why don't we go and give us the big picture. What is the Atkins diet? What's the basis for it?
Well, the Atkins diet is designed to take weight off and keep it off for a lifetime. And the main reason that it works is because of the role that fat plays in the body. Fat is the backup fuel system for energy. And what you want to do is convert it into the primary fuel system by not giving the primary fuel system by mouth. And the primary fuel system turns out to be from carbohydrates because it's glucose. So by cutting out the glucose-containing foods, which are the carbohydrates, at least most of them, not all of them, but most of them, then you automatically burn your fat. And that's why it's so advantageous and so much superior to all the other diets, by the way, are telling you to keep your quantities down, which works very well for taking weight off, but not very many people would like to stay hungry for a lifetime.
Right. And I can attest to that. I eat all I want.
Is for a lifetime.
You're right.
Okay, so you're saying that your diet is what? High proteins, high fats, low carbs. Is that
all right?
What it is?
So once you cut out carbohydrates, there's only three things you can have: protein and fat and carbs. So we're cutting out the carbs. So there are a lot of foods that are a mixture of protein and fat, which are and their main courses. You know, fish and fowl and meat and eggs and cheese. Those are all foods which don't have a significant amount of carb at all. And so those are the foods that you don't have to limit your quantity, although the instruction are eat enough that you're not hungry, but don't go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's quite an advantage. That means that from day one, the people who follow Atkins know that they're not going to be hungry for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And that's the message of Atkins for Life.
Isn't your diet, and I'm looking at an article that was written in the Wall Street Journal. It's the Health Journal section. I think it's in the Marketplace section of the newspaper. It was written by Tara Parker Pope. And
tell me about it. I don't remember.
Well, I'm just going to read a little part of it here.
Mm-hmm.
She writes, "So the truth is, if you are counting carbs, you are still counting calories. You just may not know it."
Well, that's been proven to be absolutely incorrect by 10 studies.
Let me read from the beginning here. She says, "Never before have calories been so confusing. Last week, my column about the hidden calories in so-called healthy fast foods triggered a storm of letters from readers who took issue with my calorie counting. Several readers argued that carbohydrates and fat content matter far more than calories."
Well, they were right, and the author was wrong.
Okay. "Others complained that the article failed to distinguish between healthy fats and unhealthy fats. For answers, I shared my reader mail with some of the nation's top nutritionists and weight loss experts at Tufts University School of Nutrition, the Cleveland Clinic, New York University, and University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine."
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then she goes on, calories versus carbs, and I think
But she didn't share her things with all the people who had done the research to show otherwise, like the people at Duke University and the people at all the other universities where the studies clearly showed that there is a metabolic advantage of a low-carbohydrate diet. Now, there have been at least 10 studies, probably more, showing that on low calories, when they compared a low-carbohydrate with a low-fat or a balanced diet of low calories, either one, that there was a considerably more weight loss with the same number of calories. And yet there's never been a study that didn't show that. So we've got 100% backing up our position that there is a caloric advantage, and not a single study to allow that person to arrive at her conclusion.
Well, I think, there are a lot of issues they address in this article, calories versus carbs. Because she said that several readers argue that carbohydrates matter far more than calories.
Which is true.
Well,
Dr. Atkins forever,
Dr.
Alex,
Atkins,
but Dr. Atkins has been proved correct time and time again.
But the experts, at least at Tufts, Cleveland Clinic, University, they say that this isn't true.
Yeah, but if I would talk to any one of them,
right,
I would say, where do you have studies that show what you're saying? And let me show you the 10 studies I have which back up what I'm saying. And they were in major journals. These were not studies in obscure places.
I think what she was arguing is that your diet basically just comes down to calories again. It's just a low-calorie diet.
Of course she was, but she was wrong.
Right. She did not research properly is what it comes down to.
Well, it's not just her research. I mean, again, Cleveland Clinic is one of the most highly regarded institutions of medicine in the world. It really is.
Yeah, and but they still screwed up on this one.
Yeah. I go with Dr. Atkins.
Dr. Atkins, I respect your views, and I'm not saying either one of you is right or wrong.
People won the Super Bowl and still lost four games, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe sometime we'll have to have...
Dr. Atkins, I'd like to ask you about some other benefits also. It seemed, and I'm just telling you, I'll talk about firsthand. One is heartburn. I used to get heartburn all the time. I'd go through bottles and bottles of antacid, especially when it's time to go to sleep. Since I've been on your diet, I have not had heartburn one time. Is that something that's normal?
Very common. Yeah, a lot of people tell me that. I don't write about that too much, but it's very true. I should have mentioned it because that's what I've noticed among my patients. And people don't quite realize that I don't just sit and write books, but I have treated over 50,000 patients.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm doing now. As soon as I finish here, I'm going to have a whole bunch of patients to see. And I do that. I've been doing it for 43 years. So I've seen a lot of patients, and I know what happens, and I know how we can use our approach to help people get off their medications, because that's how effective it is. It allows people to give up their medications.
And I can understand that. Another thing which I noticed, I used to get, when I got hungry, I'd get lightheaded to the point I was dizzy. I guess some people call it being like hyperglycemic.
Mm-hmm.
Now
you probably have hypoglycemia.
But yeah. Now the scenario is when I get hungry, I'm just doggone hungry, and I just eat. I don't get lightheaded anymore. And I know it's,
right.
Is that another thing?
Well, that's what we want you to do. We want you to eat. Low blood sugar is blood sugar that had been very, very high, and because it had been very high, the insulin caused it to crash down.
Uh-huh.
So the way to avoid low blood sugar is not to eat carbohydrates. Then your blood sugar doesn't go up, and then it doesn't crash down.
Gotcha.
And that's why Atkins for Life, by the way, is extremely important, even for slim people who have unstable blood sugar or low blood sugar. It's a treatment of choice for those people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's worked fantastic in that respect. And I have to thank you. There's one line in the book which I saw. I happen to be allergic to aspartame, which made this diet very difficult. But I saw in there about a new product called Splenda.
Yeah.
And it is, my gosh, for me it was a godsend. I went out and found Diet Right Soda, which I can't tell the difference between that and regular sugared soda and the other products. This Splenda product is awesome.
Right. And Atkins Nutritionals has 11 syrups, including a cola and a root beer and a ginger ale and lemon lime and stuff like that. And so you can make your own low-carb drinks by putting the syrups in the bottom of a glass and then squirting in some seltzer or club soda.
Oh, fantastic. Where would I find that?
Well, you log on to our website, mm-hmm. atkinscenter.com, and then you'll find out how to get a hold of Atkins Nutritionals. And then wonderful things will happen. You'll get a magazine called Atkins Direct.
Uh-huh.
And you'll find out all of the wonderful low-carbohydrate foods that take the place of high-carbohydrate delicious things.
Exactly. Yeah, I tell you, when I first started this diet, the first 3 days, and I have to say, if you had asked me, anyone had asked me how this diet was for the first, I could say, week and a half, I would tell you it was worse than studying for physics or calculus in college. It was the most stressful, tough thing because I am a chocoholic.
Because you weren't used to it. Yeah, you weren't used to it. You had to break all your addictions.
That chocolate, I'm a chocoholic, was the toughest thing at first. And then for the 7 days following it, I would have paid somebody $100 if I could have just had a jelly donut. I don't know why it was a jelly donut.
On the other hand, you could for about a buck and a half, you could have got one of our chocolate bars. Low in carbohydrate.
Now I'm sold. Now that's on your website as well, huh?
Oh, yeah. And it's in a lot of health food stores, and it's in Walmarts and stuff like that.
Fantastic.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about specific foods. Give us some examples of high-protein foods that you recommend.
Well, most of them are main courses. In other words, all kinds of seafood, all kinds of fowl, all kinds of meat, lots of omelets. Make sure you use the egg yolk, not the white. And then cheese is good, and then the very next level are nuts and seeds, which are almost low in carbohydrate. And so those are the things that you can have quite a lot of. Now, the other thing that you have with it are lots of vegetables.
Right.
We start with salad and all these wonderful green vegetables and give yourself a ratatouille of vegetables, and that's why you're losing. Now, you finally lose your 80 pounds or whatever it is you have to lose, and then you're on Atkins for life, and then you get a lot more things that you can add, but still, it's less in carbohydrates than the government wants you to have.
Right.
I mean, the government wants you to have 130 grams of carbohydrate for the most stupid reason you could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
They say you have to have 130 grams of carbohydrate because you need glucose for your brain, and that's how much you need to form glucose for the brain. But what they don't realize is that ketones are a better fuel for the brain, which comes from your fat. It's a better fuel, and I could swear to God, before I went on my diet, I was not that bright. I must tell you, because I was living off of glucose, and for the last 40 years, my brain's been living off of ketones, and I really feel that I'm brighter than I used to be. And right. so do a lot of my patients, by the way.
But there's certain vegetables you can't eat. For instance, corn, you're not supposed to be eating on this diet. And same with, I think it was peas.
Yeah, the very starchy ones. But on the other hand, in Atkins for Life, we do have things like brown rice and a few other starchy vegetables that we allow. But you have to know to limit the frequency with which you have it and limit the portion size, because everybody knows that's at the high end. So you can't have a lot of it, but we still like to include those in the lifestyle level.
Now, didn't you say the more fiber you eat, the more carbs you're allowed to eat also?
Yeah, fiber is very good, and a lot of people criticize the diet because there wasn't any fiber. But that was really only like the first week of the diet.
Right.
And after that, it's quite different. After that, we really do try to get people to eat more and more fiber. And a lot of the other things, in other words, when we put out bread, it's got a lot of fiber in it, and the low-carb bread and the other low-carb pasta and things like that are loaded with fiber.
Now, look, things like low-carb bread and all, where do you find those? I have searched high and low.
Well, just log on to Atkins Center, and you'll have it sent to you. And you put it in your refrigerator and pull it out when you want it.
Give us the, what about going to Kroger or you know?
Well, that's in the future. Right now, we have it. It won't be long before the stores have it, but it isn't quite yet this month.
Right, but I mean, let's say that we're not going to be buying. Let's say it's not an Atkins product, and I'm just going to Kroger. What bread would I buy there?
You can't.
There may be none.
There are none. I've searched. I mean, unless you want to have 20-something grams per slice.
Under those circumstances, I don't know. But I know how delicious ours is.
I was at Costco recently, and I bought a loaf of bread. It was called 8-grain bread, and it has, you know, whole oats, whole everything was whole.
Yeah. Well, that's not, see, ours ends up with about 3 to 4 grams of net carbs per slice, whereas a regular slice of bread is usually 14 to 16.
Exactly.
So
right.
You can certainly have it. I do that every once in a while when I don't want to have eggs for breakfast. I take a slice of bread and make it toasty and then melt some cheese on it and just have a melted cheese on toast, you know.
You know what, now that's really interesting because I love eggs. I rarely eat them because I'm always on the go in the morning. But I love eggs. Now, you're a big advocate of eggs. What's so great about the egg?
Well, number one, they are healthy, and a lot of people say it's the healthiest protein that there is. But more importantly, it's a standard breakfast that's low in carbohydrate. And all the other things that are popular in breakfasts are full of junk food,
right.
You know, the cereals and stuff of that nature. And so you need, I mean, you could eat just leftover main courses from the night before
mm-hmm.
for breakfast, which I do very frequently if I've got some. But in point of fact, when you're in a restaurant and you want to order something, you could order an omelet.
What cheese? You love, you
cheese
really like
good.
Cheese.
Cheese allowed, yeah.
And, I mean, cheese is really high in fat, but it also is pretty
high. Yeah, but it's very, very low in carbohydrate.
Low in carbohydrates.
Now, how come milk, you can't really drink milk, but you can eat cheese?
Well, you can't have milk, but you can put cream in your coffee instead. Because
mm-hmm.
milk has lactose in it, which is a sugar.
That's true, that's right, yes.
And so that's the problem. Butter is okay, cream is okay, and the cheese is okay from the cows. But if you take, and people, you know, for years they were using skim milk and all sorts of low-fat milk, and thought they were doing well, but all they really did was create a double epidemic of obesity and of diabetes.
Right.
That's what they really did.
Now, I'm a nutaholic. I love nuts of just about every single kind.
Well, then your macadamias and walnuts and pecans are going to be your best, and the cashews are going to be the worst. So make sure you pick the right one. But get a hold of
how about peanuts?
Of a carbohydrate gram counter. We put out some, other people do, but there's an Atkins carbohydrate gram counter. And look up all the different nuts and find out how much carb is in the different ones and pick from the top 10 of low carbs.
Yeah, I love pistachios too.
Yeah, pistachios and almonds I like a lot. What about beef jerky?
Well, if you like it, it's on the diet.
Well, we're both beef jerky holics.
Yeah,
here,
we love beef jerky, and it's really low in fat, high protein.
Right.
It's not. Yeah, we love beef jerky around here.
My biggest problem seems to be I like going out to dinner. And,
so do I.
And when you go out, for instance, let's say I go to a Chinese food restaurant. If I order something like beef and broccoli, it appears that it would be a good meal because broccoli is good, and so is the beef. But how do you know about the sauces and stuff
like that? They probably thicken the sauce with cornstarch.
Cornstarch,
yeah.
Which
yeah, you have to. Frankly, most large cities now, you're able to walk into a restaurant and say, "Hey, I'm on Atkins," and they say, "Okay, I'll make sure you can eat this, this, or this."
Really? I mean,
well, this is Richmond,
yeah,
Virginia.
Number one, Atkins for Life is already the number one bestseller, and it's only been out a week or two.
Well, I noticed that on Amazon.
The other one, Atkins New Diet Revolution, has been on the bestseller list, the top five, for 300 weeks, 6 years, in other words. So people know about it now, and most of the people who run restaurants know what to do for people who say they're on Atkins.
I'm going to have to try that out next time I go out, absolutely. What do you recommend? I mean, if you go to a regular restaurant, just can you eat a baked potato, for instance, with your steak?
Well, no, they want to order potatoes, so I say, look, give me this main course, and I may want fish or lobster, or I may want duck, or I may want a rack of lamb or something like that. And then they're going to say, it comes with potatoes and green vegetables, and I just say, give me a bunch of green vegetables and no potatoes.
There you go. That would work.
That's good. Now, there are a lot of energy bars out there. You of course, have your own line.
Right.
There's some others out there that are pretty popular. For example, Power Bar. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not. How much carbohydrate do they say they have?
One bar has 45 grams.
Oh, man.
Well, that would be... you'd be allowed one a year.
The bar
45
alone...
45 grams is a whole day's supply... For people who are just trying to break even.
The bar itself has 240 calories, I think.
Yeah, but now that's what you stay away from. That's a high carbohydrate.
Right. Now, but the way they market that is for the person who's about to have a really vigorous workout, they say to have that
They have to say something because they sure can't say it's going to help you lose weight.
Right. No, it's not for that purpose, I guess. A lot of those bars are not.
You don't even have to guess. You got it right.
I was up in Ashland, Virginia, coming back from a sporting event. I stopped by, I think it was either Rite Aid or an Eckerd Drugs or whatever, and they had a zero-carb bar. And I have to say, it was supposedly chocolate-based.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get one bite down. It was so bad.
Yeah, but that's the other thing. That's why you have to taste ours. Ours taste better than the real thing.
I'm gonna buy it.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna buy it. Ours.
That's why we have the number one sales of for low carbohydrate bars. These are Atkins bars.
Dr. Atkins, let's say that you have a person who does not need to lose weight, but they wanna put on some muscle mass. Let's say. All right, build a little bit of muscle.
Well, of course, you have to exercise more.
Right.
That's the way you do that.
Right. Now, is your diet good for somebody who doesn't have any weight problems but just wants to put on some muscle mass?
Well, Atkins for Life is very helpful here because that tells you, how to have a higher carbohydrate than the weight loss people, but it's still lower than mainstream is telling you to do. And so, and it's very healthy. I mean, we have a 45, 60, and 80, and 100-gram meal plans. So different people, these people would probably choose 100 gram, which is very, very interesting. And it's so much fun to eat these foods. And we've got 125 recipes, which give you a lot of ideas, but then you can just order standard dishes, too, that fall into that category.
Well, I would think that, I mean, I've noticed in the 3 weeks I've been on it now, and I did cheat one day a little bit, but just a little bit.
You're forgiven.
Well, my daughter was eating this chocolate donut, and I had to have a bite. But anyway, that's besides the point.
And a year and a half from now, you can have another bite.
Okay. But I've noticed I have so much more energy that before I was just too tired to work out, to be honest. Now, I've got this extra energy. I started working out. My daughter's working out. And it seems to be snowballing. I've got more and more energy.
But that's the big thing about Atkins. The number of people who notice that, and I guess I was the first one. That's I needed 3 hours less sleep.
Right.
And I've had much more energy, and I can spend more time seeing patients. I can start at 7:30 in the morning and work until 6, and I'm already 72 years old, and now I can play tennis, something I didn't do when I was in my 30s. And all of these things are different because of the energy that people get. Not everybody, but certainly 85-90% of the people notice an increase in energy.
Dramatic increase, I have to say.
How about how it affects one's sex life?
Well, you become so much more attractive that, of course, you have more sex life.
All right. How about let's go to exercise. So what should somebody on the Atkins for Life diet? How much exercise do they need to get?
Well, aerobic versus weight.
See, this is one thing nobody disagrees with, that everybody, skinny, fat, in between, people trying to gain, people trying to lose, all people should get more exercise than they usually want unless they're in the field of exercising as a career.
Mm-hmm. How many times?
Everybody should do more exercise, and we write about it in Atkins for Life. But on the other hand, there are some diets where you have to exercise in order to lose.
Right.
In the case of Atkins, you could lose weight if you didn't exercise,
mm-hmm.
but you just become so much healthier if you exercise.
How much exercise do we need, and what kind of exercising should we do?
Oh, that's up to different people, different ages, different things. But
let's say we're middle-aged.
You should do things which give you some strength, things which give you duration, and things which you enjoy. One of your exercises should be something like a game you play, like tennis or something like that, or swimming, or something where you just enjoy doing it. So all three of those things are valuable.
I have to say, I was doing some full court basketball with teaching my daughter and her team how to play.
Right.
And going back, I'd say 15 years ago, I didn't have as much energy as I do now when I was running it back and forth on the court.
So next time somebody asks that question, you answer it.
There you go.
That's the right answer.
But, I mean, is there a minimum number of times a week that somebody should work out and in a duration of time when they work out for their
heart?
Well,
I talk about exercise, but I'm not focused on making that any different from what other people are recommending.
Right.
And there will always be some people who have a problem in their knee or their hips or something and can't do all the things that other people can do. But there's no question that 99% of us need to exercise more than we're doing.
And how much? So I mean, if I'm a healthy male, 35, 40 years old, should I be exercising twice a week? Is that enough? Or five times a week? And
More like 5 to 7 times a week.
5 to 7 times a week.
And Alex does that. He's almost every single day in the gym. So.
I'm kind of a gym rat. And when you exercise...
Well, then you could have another exercise that you do outside the gym so that you don't have to do it all in the gym.
Right. No, I like playing tennis. I actually like to swim, too.
Well, then you're doing it right, so don't worry about it.
Well, no, I'm not worried. It's just for the purposes of our audience. I know. Some people that I talk to, I know somebody who says that she's an active person. I say, what do you mean active? Well, I'll walk to my car and I'll walk upstairs and
walk to the refrigerator.
She'll even every once in a while go on a long walk, okay? But I was trying. I was always told that you want to exercise. Try to exercise at least, really, 4 times a week at least if you can, and you want to get your heart rate up to at least 80% maximum for at least half an hour straight.
Well, yeah, if you don't have a heart condition, that would be true.
Yeah, if you don't have a heart condition. And, of course, this person argued with me, but anyway, that's what I was always told, kind of as the minimum you want to do. And I was also told you want to try to do some weight-bearing exercise of some kind.
Right. All different kinds. The more different ones you do, the better off it is.
Right. Curious about fruit. I love bananas, but bananas are not
bananas diet.
They're not one of your favorite fruits, and why is that?
Well, bananas are quite high in sugar. On the other hand, berries are quite suitable for the diet. We start people on that very early in the weight loss phase. We certainly encourage it as a major part of the Atkins for Life. Melons are also very good. And fresh things like peaches and plums that are, when they're in season, they're quite good. The fruits that aren't very sweet are the ones you should that you should look for. And if there's some that you love, then these are the ones that should be a part of your lifestyle.
Did you mention apples? Were they stood or?
There are some green apples that aren't too sweet, and yeah, there's room for one of them for the maintenance phase in Atkins for Life.
Mm-hmm.
If people read the book, you'll see that apples are on there.
It's funny because in the marketing of bananas, I don't know if it's the banana industry or Dole, but the tagline is quite possibly the perfect food or perfect snack, you know what I mean?
Well, it's certainly perfect for the people who own the banana industry.
Yeah,
it's perfect for them.
Right. But
I don't agree with what they're saying because it would make people regain the weight they lost.
Right. Right. But they do have a lot of potassium. Don't they have a lot of vitamins in them?
They have a lot of sugar in them. I mean, so you have to find things with potassium in them that don't have sugar in them.
Don't have sugar in them. I see. Let's talk about fat. Because you go into some detail about fat. There's good fats and there's bad fats. Can you explain that?
Well, the bad fats are things like margarine. And there are a few other things that really have been shown to be dangerous. Things that I had to leave off my diet, even though the diet allows the kind of fat that would be in meat or a duck or the butter that you might put on a lobster or something of that nature. Those at least are not unhealthy fats, but yet if you were to put margarine on these things, then it would be something unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. And what is it about margarine? You mentioned monounsaturated fats, polyunsaturated, and saturated fats.
Now all of those are the fats that have been shown to have some unpleasant side effects. In other words, they really can cause some damage. So a lot of the people who were criticizing a diet that contains fat were really focused on those ones, but what they didn't recognize is the fact that from the very beginning we told people not to have those fats.
So which fat is the good fat then? I mean, what's it called? Is it,
well,
if we're looking on a label?
Well, certainly olive oil is a really good example of a good fat.
That's a good fat.
Cream is another one, heavy cream, so that you can put cream on your berries.
Right.
Or if you crave desserts, you can put low-carb sweetener on heavy cream and make an ice cream like that.
Ooh,
now, one of the things we're going to have in the very near future is low-carb ice cream, which will be loaded with cream.
Oh, man, now you're talking. Now you're talking.
Well, I know. Not only am I talking, but I've been eating it a lot because we have the stuff that before we make it, I'm tasting.
You taste
tasting
test it? Your chief taste
test
it? Got any job openings up there?
I'll tell you that right now.
But on a label, you know, they have the nutrition facts, Dr. Atkins. Am I looking, what do I want to see? Do I want to see saturated fat? Is that what I want to see? Is that the good kind?
Well, it doesn't make that much difference. You certainly don't want to see the monounsaturated fat. Those would be the ones you'd want to avoid.
Mono,
if that's on there, but that's not on the label.
Mono, you don't want to see.
They don't put it on the label. I think they're talking about doing it in the future, but right now they're not doing it.
So what do I want to see?
Well, I think the main thing to look for on the label is how much carbohydrate is in the food.
Just carbohydrates.
Because if there's low carbohydrate, I mean, if you are on a low-carbohydrate lifestyle,
right,
then fat is not going to pose the same problems that it does when you're on a high carbohydrate lifestyle. You see, all the studies which made fat look bad were studies done on people who ate a lot of carbs. But when the studies were done on people with low carbs, they didn't get the same results at all. They got the opposite results.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're talking about the, the ketones, is it?
Yeah, ketones are really the way in which fuel is provided from fat.
But my doctor, who also has been on your diet and loved it also, said the one thing to be careful of is it can damage the kidney, is it?
That's never happened, though. There's never been a case report, and we've already had 25 million people on the diet, and not a single case report of kidney damage has ever been published.
Is that an AMA issue where they're just trying to scare people then again?
Well, a lot of people people just say that without realizing that it never happened. I mean, it was just one of these things that somebody said it, and everybody assumed that the person who said it knew what he was talking about, and that person didn't.
Okay.
And it's just one of these many, many things. They've tried so hard to suppress this diet and push the low-fat diet until they created a double epidemic of obesity and diabetes. And now I think they're beginning to recognize that they did something very deadly,
exactly.
Which they did.
I got to ask you, on a side note, there's another new book in the top 10 of the USA Today list by Suzanne Summers.
Yeah, that's pretty similar.
I was about to say, it seemed almost like, we did our list last week and said, boy, there's a copycat book if I ever saw
one. Well, let's not say that. But she always says nice things about me, like that she really got her ideas from me, which she's actually said that on some of her shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that her books are also very useful to get. And I mean, she's not a doctor.
Right. Well,
on the other hand, I'm not beautiful, so what do you
mean? Well, I didn't say anything negative. I just said it's a copycat type book.
Where are you headed now in the future? Are there going to be more books, and are you going to expand your line of foods and distribution? Are you going to get your foods
every
in more
one
stores?
Of those is true.
Every one is true.
And plus, the Atkins Center in New York is getting busier and busier. And one of the things that we do here at the center that might help some people, there will be some people who are on the diet and everybody they know is losing weight, but they're not losing weight. And most of these people are taking some medication which prevents weight loss, or some hormones that prevent weight loss.
Oh, I see.
And one of the things that we do is we show people how to get off their medications, those medications, and switch to very natural things which work better or don't have these side effects of putting weight on, and then they can get back to their goal weight again. And so that's why people come from all over the country to see me in New York City.
Didn't I even read in your book that you had at least one patient that got off his diabetic medication when they went on this diet?
Well, at least one. How about at least 400?
Wow. Well, I'm just talking about, I read about one in the book, so I know there's at least one.
Yeah, well, I can only write about one at a time, but
exactly.
I mean, that's what we do. My next book's going to be on how to put an end to the diabetes epidemic.
That's fantastic.
Diabesity?
Well, it's the same illness. Obesity and diabetes.
Diabetes.
Same illness. They both have too much insulin, and along with that, too much insulin also gives you high blood pressure and high triglycerides, which in turn gives you heart disease. So there's so many reasons to restrict carbohydrates.
Now, I was talking to my daughter's principal about different issues in the school, and one of our biggest concerns is the obesity in children. How is this?
Oh, indeed.
How is this diet for kids?
Oh, if your child's starting to gain, they have to do Atkins for life right then and there. I mean, it's important because children get addicted to sweet beverages, for one thing, and sweet foods. And once you become a sugar addict, it's like becoming an alcoholic.
Right.
And it's very hard to give it up, but you've got to deal with your kids. Don't wait till they're adolescents. You've got to deal with them as soon as you see that they're choosing sugary items. Once you see that, then you've got to take the stand and make sure that they give it up. You've got to do everything in your power to make sure that doesn't happen.
You know, that's a nice segue. I was going to ask you about alcohol. What kind of alcohol should you drink in an Atkins diet?
Well, we start off by restricting it when you're getting started, and then we pick the ones that aren't sugary. In other words, you could have a whiskey, scotch, something like that, or you could have a very dry wine.
Red wine?
Red or white, if they're very dry. There actually even are some very low-carbohydrate beers around that are just coming.
Michelob just announced it. I saw it
right,
on TV.
That's what I'm talking about.
I was shocked when I saw that on there.
Well,
really?
They did it because they read my book.
There you go.
Really, Michelob has a... What's the name of it? I'm curious.
It's just their low-carb beer. It's just
low-carb beer? Yeah.
Or no-carb, if it might be. I can't remember if it was none or very low.
But then what is it? It's water? You got barley,
but
yeast?
It's still got alcohol in it.
Right.
See, the problem with alcohol in regard to weight loss is that alcohol serves as a fuel that will burn even before carbohydrates or fat will burn. So as long as you got alcohol in your system, you won't be losing any body fat because the alcohol will be the fuel, and it won't be until you finish with the alcohol that you start losing your body fat because of low carbohydrate eating.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, you've answered all of my questions, Jack. You have anything? Any other questions for Dr. Atkins?
Let's just throw one out before we wrap this up. But if you do, you're on your diet and you've done it for a period of time and you cheat, how long does it take for your system to get back into the ketosis area again when you go right back on your diet? Let's say I cheated and had a whole donut, or went out and had some white rice with some chicken or something.
Yeah, well, generally it takes about 48 hours to start getting you back into ketosis again.
Oh, so it's pretty quick, then. You don't have to wait a good period of time.
Yeah, but the main thing is that's when you go back to the induction level. If you've been off the diet, that induction level, which is just there to start the response, you may use it again if you've been off the diet. It's a great way to undo the harm of that you may have done by eating carbs for whatever reason.
Interesting.
Yes.
You've been so successful with this, and I'm going to modify my diet as a result of it. Dr. Atkins, thank you very much for joining us on the book show.
When you get your new book out, your next book, whatever, let us know. We'll get you...
Well, that'll be close to a year from now.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you again, and in fact, I'm going to order some of your foods in.
Yeah, I'm going
to
try.
And we're going to taste them, and we might want to talk to you about how good they are as well.
Oh, I'd love to do that. That would be fun.
All right. We'll do it. Thanks, Dr. Atkins.
Thank you very
much. My pleasure.
Take care of yourself.
Bye now.
All right. That's Dr. Atkins. He has written a book, many books, but this one was Atkins for Life. It is at the top of the charts. You can go to Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. It's everywhere.